our guest from Transnet. My name is Disang Muchumi, and I'm the committee secretary. I would like to put an apology on behalf of the chairperson of the full committee, who would be unable to be here. The Honorable Coral will give the formal apology for the chairperson. In terms of the rules of parliament, in the absence of a chairperson, one is required to facilitate the election of an acting chairperson for the meeting in question. And I would like to facilitate that particular process and ask members to nominate an honorable member who can chair the meeting for today. Ms. September?
Okay, thank you. I nominate Honorable Kurunov.
Ms. September nominates Honorable Kurunov. Any seconder? Mr. Van Dalen? Seconded by Mr. Van Dalen. Thank you. Mr. Honorable Kurunov, may you please proceed to the chair?
Honourable members, the CEO of Group Chief Executive of Transnet, the chairperson, members from the Transnet, thank you for the confidence put in me or to elect me chairperson for the session. I really appreciate it. It's a very important meeting with Transnet today, looking at the annual report of Transnet. First, let me put the apology of our chairperson, Honorable Peter Maluleka. He felt ill as he was about to board the plane yesterday. He phoned and he was not at all well. When he landed in Cape Town, he was hospitalized. He's currently in hospital. He phoned me last night. He's recovering. But I'm sure on behalf of the committee and everybody present in this meeting, we wish him a speedy recovery in hospital. And we will follow it up soon after the meeting, just to make sure that he is okay, if it's with your approval. Then let's start immediately. First of all, I want to welcome Transnet, and by name the chairperson of the board, Mr. Makwanazi. The group chief executive, Mr. Brian Molefe, all members of the board, members of the group executive committee of Transnet, and all officials from Transnet, you're most welcome to this meeting. Then a word of welcome also to all members of the portfolio committee on public enterprises and the support staff. Welcome to the media. Welcome to Parliamentary Monitoring Group, doing an important job for us, and all other guests and observers. Just by way of introduction, I think it's you are presenting today, Mr. Molefe, your integrated annual report for 2010-11. And this is in the annual calendar of Parliament, a very important date when you present your report to Parliament for scrutiny and overview by the Portfolio Committee. Let me at the outset congratulate you on good income statements, both for the company and the group, and also solid financial statements, and the many achievements you achieved during the year that is captured in your annual report, including achievements in meeting your group key performance indicators that is embedded into your report. We will today consider your overview of this report, the integrated report, the executive statements, your operational reviews, and your annual financial statements. And for us, it's an important occasion to the parliamentary oversight over Transnet. Today is where you report on your meeting of your targets, how you spent your budget for both yourself and us. It's a highlight of the year. and a very important occasion. This is a very lengthy report, 330 pages, but it makes good reading. And it's a pleasure to receive such a report with so much detail. So let me go into, before we ask the committee to introduce themselves and start there to introduce your team, can I just get commitment from the committee to the procedure we're going to follow? I've discussed it with the group chief executive and officer, and he indicated to me a total of 45 minutes presentation time is sufficient for Thompson. If we can agree on that, 45 minutes presentation. Thereafter, we will open it up for questions. I think we must just structure it a little bit to give all members a chance to ask questions and say, for instance, in the first round, ask two questions, your two most important questions. And then we complete the round, and if there are more questions, we go into a second round, again two questions. And please, not question one, A, B, C, D, and then a second question. It's question one and question two. So help me on that one. And thereafter, if we can get an agreement that we try to finish this meeting by 12:30. Can we get a gentleman's agreement that we finish at 12:30? Person's agreement. Okay. I'm going to ask the members of the portfolio committee first to introduce themselves. Comrade September.
Okay, you said my name already. Honourable Connie September, a member of this committee.
Good morning. Gloria Borman, a member of this committee.
Good morning, Albert Mugwena, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Hololo. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rose Santos, member of the committee.
Yes, good morning. My name is Peter van Dalen, also a member of this committee.
Hi, Lance Trailing. I'm also a member of this committee.
I'm Gerard Koornhof, also a member of the committee. Mr. Molefe, over to you to introduce your team, and then I think you can straight away go into the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Koornhof. Thank you, Honorable members of this committee. I am Mafika Mkwana, the chairman of Transnet, and naturally, as part of this agenda item, I would have loved to have presented this earlier on in the year, so that maybe just before the AGM or immediately after the AGM we could do this, but we'll look at our calendars for the next financial year to see if we can get better coordination. Having mentioned that, let me indicate that Transnet is proud to come to the Portfolio Committee with Brian Molefe, our Chief Executive Officer, who started in February, and to give you some updates on how we performed last year. I will hand over to Brian, and then he will introduce his team as to how they present, and I will assist with questions and answers later on. Thank you. Over to you, Molefe.
Chair. Chair, we have... I think I'm going to ask members of the Transnet Group Executive to introduce themselves.
Brian, good morning, honourable members and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Anoj Singh, Acting Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, I'm Mara Moses. I head up the Capital Projects Portfolio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chris Shwedi. I'm responsible for group planning at Transnet.
Good morning. My name is Mboni. So I'm responsible for communication at Transnet.
Good morning, everybody. Shaw Moller, CEO of Transnet Pipelines.
Good morning. My name is Virginia Dunjwa. I'm the Chief Risk Officer for Transnet.
Good morning. The name is Carl Sotrigwa, the CEO of Transnet Port Terminals.
Morning. I'm Ayanda Grappa, the group company secretary.
Good morning. My name is Tao Mora from the National Ports Authority.
Good morning. I'm Zola Steven. I'm responsible for corporate services at Transnet Group.
Good morning. My name is Sam Maduana from DPE.
Adam Peter from DPE.
Good morning. Roderick Wolfenden from Internal Audit.
Zola Masubonge, DPE official.
Morning, I'm Phyllis, in the office of the group chief executive.
Loretta Lawrence, PA to the chairperson.
Wendell Rose Reuters.
Robert Johnson, Linda.
Linda, Info Business Day.
Donald Presley, Business Report.
Paul Vecchiato, IMEC Bridge.
Good morning, Sir Kabi Zabawa, the Assistant to the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, I for the Committee.
You, Adam, PNG.
Thank you so much. Simulator, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We can proceed with the presentation. I'm going to ask the Mr. I'm not seeing our acting chief financial officer to take us through the financial highlights of last year's financial statement.
Thank you, Brian. basically, on the slide 4 in your pack, you'll see a summary of the financial highlights for the year. Revenue up 6.6% to 38 billion. EBITDA, which is a measure of our profitability, up 9.4% to 15.8 billion. Cash generated from operations, which is quite an important measure for Transnet, given the fact that we've got the capital expenditure program that needs to be funded. Healthy cash generation at 18.3 billion, up 13.5% compared to the prior year. Capital investment up 16.6% to 21.5 billion. From a ratios perspective, the two ratios that we normally look at, which are quite important to Transnet, in order to fund the capital investment program, is really the gearing ratio and the cash interest cover ratio, and both of those are quite significantly healthy based on the prior year performance. Cash interest cover deteriorating slightly compared to the prior year, but that is expected because of the capital expenditure program that we've undertaken, as well as gearing, deteriorating slightly from 39.8% to 41.1% over that year. The slides that follow basically give you a further detail on that. As you can see, we've basically, if you look at the full income statement for the year, EBITDA, as I mentioned before, up 9.4%. Profit before taxation up 15.9% to 5.6 billion. And profit for the year after taxation up 32.8% to 4.1 billion. And I think the sustained financial performance of the company has created a platform with which we could execute the capital expenditure program for the year. If we look at a more close look at revenue, as you can see, over the past 5 years, we've had healthy growth in revenue, 9% annual growth every year. And in the last year, we saw a 6.6% growth in revenue from 35.6 billion to 37.9 billion for the year. If you look at how that revenue was made up, we see that the rail sector has contributed the most to revenue. And if you look at the rail sector and you look at what's making up the revenue, you see that we've got, again, the export coal, export iron ore, and GFB, the predominant contributors of revenue to the group. GFB increasing 12% year-on-year, and later on you'll see the volume statistics that relate to that as well. Iron ore increasing 22% from 2.2 to 2.7 billion, and coal revenue being pretty much static at 5.6 billion year-on-year. The port sector as well, quite a significant increase in revenue, 22.4% increase in revenue compared to the prior year, and that's predominantly as a result of about a 12% increase in container volumes compared to the prior year. And that is off the back of quite a low base because of the economic recession that we had in 2008-2009. TFR still is the largest contributor to revenue at 60% of the revenue base. Operating expenses, which is on page slide 7 of your pack, as you can see, 8.1% increase over the 5 years, which is a relatively good performance given the fact that we've had significant increase in input costs such as electricity, steel, steel prices, and labor costs over that period of time. The group has been able to keep operating expenses in check. As you can see, in the last year, operating expenses only increased by 4.7%. And that is mainly due to a cost-saving initiative that we've implemented in the company that has resulted in a 2.1 billion reduction in compared to planned costs. The marginal increase in operating expenses obviously is indicative of the ongoing cost-saving initiatives that we've implemented as management, as well as certain efficiency improvements that the business has actually implemented throughout the operations. That has resulted in a significantly strong EBITDA performance. As you can see, EBITDA has actually grown 10% year-on-year over the last 5 years, and more specifically 9.4% in the last year compared to 2010. The EBITDA margin has remained relatively healthy, as you can see, at around 40% on average, and that's notwithstanding the economic recession in 2008 and 2009. And that is predominantly because of the fact that we've implemented the cost-saving initiatives to compensate for the loss of revenue in those years particularly. If we look at depreciation is the cost that, of the capital investment program, one of the costs of the intensive capital investment program. As anticipated, you can see that depreciation has increased year on year by 18% compared to 2010 to 7.1 billion. And going forward, we expect depreciation to continue increasing because of the ramp up on the capital expenditure program. Net finance costs, as anticipated as well, because we have to borrow significantly to finance the capital expenditure program, has increased by 18.1% from 2.4 to 2.8 billion. And going forward, we anticipate that picture to remain pretty much the same as well. Taxation, relatively comparable to the prior year, 1.7 billion in the prior year, 1.5 billion in the current year. And as I said before, that resulted in operating profit increasing by 32 or 33%. From 3.1 to 4.1 billion year on year. The balance sheet, as you can see, the company is basically has about 170 billion rand worth of assets. It's a significantly strong balance sheet and actually enables the create the platform with which we can actually go to the capital markets and borrow in the debt capital markets to finance the capital expenditure that we actually require. If we look at the details of the balance sheet, property, plant, and equipment has increased from 113 billion to 137 billion, which is a significant increase, predominantly as a result of the capital expenditure program of 21 billion, as we mentioned before. We've also had a certain revaluation of port and pipeline equipment of about 8.7 billion for the year, giving you the total of 137 billion that we've got recorded in the balance sheet. Return on total average assets is showing a declining trend. It has decreased from 7.7 to 6.6% over the year. But this trend is anticipated in a relatively large capital-intensive program that we've got, and we anticipate that trend to start reversing probably towards the latter part of year 4 or 5 of our plans going forward. Long-term borrowing, as expected, we will see an upward trend in long-term borrowing because of the debt that we will raise to execute the 110 billion over the next 5 years. Gearing, as I mentioned before, relatively stable at around 35 to 37%. We anticipate gearing as a result of the borrowing program to peak at about 47% over the next 3 years and then start tapering down towards 40% again over the period of time. Cash, quite an important indicator for us. As you can see, the business continues to demonstrate that it has the ability to generate predictable and strong cash flows from its operations. Cash flows from operations after working capital increasing about 13% year on year. We're quite pleased with that. Cash interest cover, which is quite a significant loan covenant that we've got, strong at 3.9 times cash interest cover. The covenant that we are required to maintain is a minimum of 3 times cash interest cover. So we do not anticipate breaching the 3x cash interest cover over the next 5 years. The sources of the funding that we've raised about 18.4 billion in the last financial year. As you can see, the Global Medium-Term Note Program raised about 5.1 billion. The Domestic Medium-Term Note Program, which is the local debt markets, contributed about 7.7 billion to that. Commercial paper, which is also the local debt capital markets, about 2 billion of that. And bank loans and other facilities, basically another about 4 billion of the funding that we require. In terms of the financial statements that I've just taken you through, external audit has reviewed that, and they've issued an unqualified audit opinion. They've also looked at certain other requirements of the Auditor General. The Auditor General has required external audit to audit the performance indicators or the KPIs of the company, and they have audited that and issued an unqualified opinion on the KPIs of Transnet. They've looked at procurement contracts to the value of about 22 billion rand worth of procurement contracts. And other than the irregular expenditure that has been recorded in the financial statement, they have not found any other issues in those contracts. In terms of the control environment, very healthy control environment of Transnet, either if you look at internal audit assessment or the Auditor General's assessment of the control environment as well. Just some background in terms of the irregular expenditure that we've reported, which is on slide 14. There was an irregular expenditure of about 7.2 billion that was classified irregular in terms of the PFMA due to non-compliance of certain Transnet procurement, certain internal procurement processes and practices. In all cases, we'd like to stress that we are very comfortable that value for the services that were rendered by these organizations was obtained by the company. So it was not fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but rather irregular. All non-compliances have to date been rectified. And as recorded on the slide, you can see that from an internal audit perspective, there's been a significant amount of effort that has been put into the verification of the tender processes and practices. And we have now basically looked at a required improvement rating rather than unsatisfactory that we had in the past. And the external auditors also have looked at about 104 contracts and haven't seen a significant deterioration in the controls over the procurement environment. And we as management have obviously implemented a whole host of controls that we've listed on slide 14.
Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Chris Reddy to talk about the volume growth, productivity and efficiencies over the last year.
Thank you, Brian. Just maybe a few introductory comments in terms of presenting progress and performance against the implementation of our Quantum Leap strategy. During the financial year in question, we were in the context of a very constrained global economic environment. The South African economy also performed worse than expected. And a significant event during the period was industrial action that affected the business for a period of 3 weeks. So that all drastically impacted us specifically in terms of the productivity and efficiency performances in line with our Quantum Leap strategy. If we move on to the general freight business, I think what's very heartening to note in terms of the performance is for the first year since 2007, we've managed to see a growth in the general freight business, although a marginal growth of 2.2%. It does show the turnaround in the general freight business and in terms of the fruits of the investments that have been made over the last few years in this particular sector of the Transnet business. We still see continuous challenges in terms of productivity and efficiency, mainly driven by the industrial action that I've indicated, but also in terms of other operational challenges with regards to cable theft, faulty rolling stock because of the age of the rolling stock used in the general freight business. So that continues to be a challenge going forward. In terms of one positive aspect of the general freight business is basically the growth in some of the strategic commodities forming part of that sector, where there's been a very focused look in terms of efficiency improvements and investments. So if you look at the containers and rail, we have actually shown a very steady growth from 2007 with quite a significant growth from 2010 to 2011. In terms of domestic coal, again, there's been a change around for the financial year in question. Although there's been a general decline from 2007, we for the first time in the last 4 years have seen actually a growth in coal volumes, domestic coal volumes. And a lot of that has been based on Transnet's support of Eskom's road to rail program and a focus in working with Eskom to move more domestic coal onto rail. Magnet Pipe is an area with huge opportunity and growth, and as you can see over the last 4 years, we've seen a 26.3% growth in Magnet Pipe. There was opportunities for additional growth, if not for the bridge collapse experienced on the main route for magnetite exports. In terms of export manganese, it's been a very successful year with a growth of 23.1% in export volumes, and that's mainly been driven by the capacity created and reinstated in the PE export facility, as well as investments made by Transnet in terms of rolling stock to support the export channel. If we move on to export coal, again, we note a change in the decline over the last 4 years. For the first time, we see a growth in export coal volumes, although very marginal. What is very important to note, the impact of the industrial action lost about 3.1 million tons. So if that didn't occur, we'd be sitting around 65 million ton export, which is more closer to a 5% growth in export coal. In terms of productivity, the industrial action, but specifically in terms of rolling stock challenges, cable theft, and also customer cancellations impacted the productivity and efficiency in that part of the business. Export iron ore has really shown the fruits of an integrated investment on the export corridor in terms of rail and port infrastructure and operating capacity improvements. We've had 11.4% year-on-year growth from 2007. From 2010 to 2011, the growth has been 3.4%. Generally, in terms of productivity and efficiency, there's been a slight deterioration. One positive point to note is the improvement in the terminal operation productivity with an increase in the ship loading rates at Transnet port terminals. Looking at maritime containers, this is obviously very much determined by the GDP growth of the country. But despite a poor growth rate for the country, Transnet managed to see a significant increase in container volumes from 2010 to 2011. This has been mainly driven by a very targeted and focused strategy in terms of attracting transshipment volumes into the port sector and Transnet promoting the role of the South African port system as a transshipment hub for Southern Africa and for intercontinental transshipment volumes. So that's really assisted in growing the container volumes in the maritime sector. The productivity and efficiency figures also show very good improvement across all the container terminals in the port system. The one terminal still facing many challenges is the DCT Durban Container Terminal in the Port of Durban. And this is mainly related to a very aging equipment fleet, and plans are in place to actually acquire new ship-to-shore cranes and thus assist in improving the efficiency and handling rates in that terminal. If we look at the petroleum sector, again, under very capacity-constrained environment, we've managed to increase volumes on the petroleum sector by 1.5%. This has been largely to better utilization of capacity through the use of drag-reducing agents, as well as a significant reduction in production interruptions. I think the important thing is during this constrained environment, before the NMPP capacity comes on stream, is the ultimate objective of Transnet to ensure we secure supply to the inland market, which we've successfully managed to do by complementing the pipeline capacity with the rail capacity. So that's been very valuable from a transit perspective in terms of integrating those various modes to ensure security of supply to the inland. If we move on to a summary of capital investments, You would note in 2011 seen the highest capital investments made over the last 5 years at Transnet at 21.5 billion rand. This has been slightly less than the 22.8 billion rand budgeted for, 94% of the planned spend. But I think the important point is it didn't affect capacity creation and disruptions or constraining capacity to the key customers, and we managed to create significant capacity in the iron ore, manganese, and containers on rail sectors, as from a port perspective in terms of the bulk, automotive, and container sectors. Transnet continues to invest aggressively in terms of infrastructure and equipment, and as I know you indicated, purely funded from Transnet's balance sheet at this stage. Just in terms of the summary of the five-year capital investment plan, the five-year plan in terms of our corporate plan is sitting at 110 billion rand. You can see the split in terms of the investments in the different asset types. A lot of it focused on the rail sector. And again, a significant portion of that is still focused on sustaining the current capacity we have. In other words, in maintaining capacity versus expanding capacity, and that's at 63% versus 37%. In terms of the division splits, rail being the largest business in the group takes up the greatest portion of the investments, with also significant investments in terms of the pipelines as part of the NMPP project, but also significant investments in the port sector in terms of additional capacity creation and also in terms of replacement equipment to improve productivity and efficiency levels in the port system. If we then move on in terms of a summary of the asset types that made up the investment and how it affected the asset base of Transnet, you can see in terms of the locomotives, a significant acquisition of locomotives for the year, 58 new 19E locomotives for the coal line, 34 class 15E locomotives for the iron ore line, and then two for general freight in terms of diesel locomotives, significant acquisition of wagons for the manganese export, as I indicated earlier, in terms of capacity that we've created on that corridor. And then also a lot of investments in terms of refurbishments of the very aging rolling stock fleet, and also in terms of fixed infrastructure, in terms of rehabilitation and maintenance of the current rail infrastructure. On the port side, with growing port volumes, we've also managed to undertake a number of investments with acquisition of additional tugs, dredges, etc., being a significant portion of Port Authority investments in equipment.
Chair, I'm going to ask Moira Moises to talk about the mega project.
Thanks, Brian. Well, as Chris said, it was a very busy year for us and a very successful year. We achieved Transnet's highest ever investment in capital. Just going through some of the mega projects, on the iron ore line, the project to increase capacity to just over 60 million tons is well progressed, and we made substantial headway last year with additional 24 million tons created today, and that program is nearing its completion. I'll come back to the pipeline in a little bit more detail. We have put a separate slide together for that. On the re-engineering of the container terminal in Durban, what we seek to do with this project is use the same geographical area but create a lot more stacking capacity. And that program is nearing completion as well, with an additional 300,000 TEU capacity having been created. At Nuka, which is our new flagship port in the Eastern Cape, we have now five fully functional deep water berths which are operational, and we continue with completion of the paving works on the stack area for the container terminal, which will see us creating 700,000 TEUs for that port.
So that's a question. TEU?
It's 20 ton equivalent. It's the term which we use to refer to one of the containers, one of those boxes. And you get two sizes. You get a 20-foot and a 40-foot container. So this would refer to the 20-foot container. It's just the unit of measure that we use. Sorry, we shouldn't speak in acronyms. You're quite right. Thanks for pointing that out.
Not only acronym, but also parlance.
Yeah. And, Chair, I can just mention that Nuka also has rail connectivity, and that's been completed, and currently we can service 140,000 boxes by rail from Nuka. The Durban Harbour entrance project, which very proud of my team, received an accolade from the South African Engineering Council and was awarded as one of the top projects for the year, is completed. And what this does is it gives us the opportunity to entertain larger vessels in a very safe way at the Port of Durban and keep its premium status. So with the doubling of the width of the entrance channel as well as the deepening, we can now accommodate vessels of 9,200 TEUs. And recently the team was in Durban and had a tour. We actually witnessed one of these great big vessels with 9,100 TEUs, wasn't it, Carl? That is calling at the port there now. Coal line expansion, all the study work is completed to take the coal line to 81 million tonnes, which includes the transient support for Eskom for their 32-odd million tonnes road to rail. And we're just waiting for DPE approval on that one in order for us to continue with execution. And then in Cape Town, the expansion of the Cape Town Container Terminal, which sees, again, us utilizing the same area but putting in a more efficient and productive system, introducing rail rubber-tired gantry cranes, which gives us the ability to stack more containers in the same space, is also well in progress, and the first phase is nearing completion, where we will create capacities of an extra 200,000 TEUs, which will take us total capacity of that terminal up to 900,000 boxes. I can ask you just to move to the slide on the NMPP. I'll give a short update on that. I think we have, it's safe to say, resolved and mitigated the issues which we had initially on this project, and the project is well in hand and on progress. We have met all our milestones in this past year. We have now a very robust governance process in place, which is chaired by our CEO, which reviews the pipeline progress and project progress on a monthly basis. The inland pipes, three 16-inch inland pipes, are now fully completed and have been commissioned, and what this allows is for TPL to have a much greater flexibility in meeting customer demand in the inland area. So those are all done and completed. We have begun the commissioning process or preparations for the commissioning process of the 24-inch line linking Durban and Gauteng with its associated pump stations. And that will begin. We'll put diesel into that pipeline in October, and Charles and his team will have it in operation in the early part of 2012. Charles, I don't know if you want to address security pledges. I think Chris did pick them up, and obviously it was a very relevant concern raised previously by this committee, but we would like to provide assurance that there have been no issues around the security of supply, and the DJP has not been compromised in any way, and as Chris mentioned, a very successful program between TFR and TPL to ensure that where that additional capacity was required, it could be taken up by rail, which was done very successfully. Thanks, Brian.
Chair, if I can turn to the slide on locomotive and wagon acquisition program, we have in 2011 taken delivery of 58 19E dual voltage locomotives for the coal line. We have acquired 43 diesel locomotives and 44 class 15E locomotives. The actual spending on the coal line during 2010-11 has been 925 million on the coal line, 1 billion on the ore line, and 268 million on the ore line, and on the class 15E ore 32, and then 334 million on the GFB general freight business. Going forward, we will be acquiring locomotives in terms of the schedule that is at the bottom left of the slide. I'm going to ask Zola Stephen to deal with issues of human capital and strategic enablers.
Thank you, Brian. On the human capital, we're talking about the capacity building initiatives that we undertook in the previous year. As at 1 March 2011, we had 1,400 apprentices and 427 engineers in the company. At the time, we had granted 52 engineering bursaries for the year 2011, and we had 356 engineering technicians in the internship program. We continue to address the challenges we have in terms of the availability of appropriate skills to deal with the capital program that we are undertaking at Transnet. The percentage of training was at 3% of personnel costs. And if we turn to the employment equity report that we had at the close of the year, there was a 1% move in terms of the composition of our workforce. We had 24% of white employees, as well as 76% of black employees. That is in line with the BEE legislation that we currently track and report to the Department of Labor. And then we had 20% female employees, as well as 80% male, which indicated some drastic move since 2001 in terms of increasing the female employees within Transnet. The people with disabilities, that was at 0.8% of the Transnet workforce. On the strategic enablers, the BE spend against the total measured procurement spend was at 75% in 2011. This means it has grown significantly over the past 3 years. We had 6.9 billion in 2008, and in the financial year we're reporting, we were at 19.4 billion, which also indicated a higher achievement for Transnet compared to the DCI targets. In the CSDP, CSDP stands for Competitive Supplier Development Program, which Transnet implemented. We have made some inroads there on the procurement of the 100 General Electric locomotives that have already been spoken about. The total localization value as a percentage of the total contract was at 52%. This includes the skills development within our rail divisions, both Transit Freight Rail and Transit Rail Engineering. With regards to the procurement of 32 15E locomotives, the total localization value is at 40%, which includes the local assembly by Union Carriage Works. And this is due to the 15E build program. Due to the 15E build program, 734 jobs are being preserved in the country. With regards to the procurement of electromotive diesel, locomotive spare parts and components, the total localization value there is at 34%. And on the GE locomotive parts, the long-term parts agreement, the total localization value is 12%, which includes skills development as well as the purchasing of local parts and services. That also goes some way towards preserving jobs in the country. on the branch lines, but in the rail network we have lines that have been classified as the branch lines. These in the year that we're reporting on, they were grouped by cluster, and comprehensive feasibility studies were carried out. And then in October of 2010, there was a call for expressions of interest for Transnet to understand or gauge the interest out there for the disposal of the branch lines. There were 47 companies that responded positively to the likely opportunities and competing in the disposal of the branch lines.
Chairman, the chief officer, to talk about safety issues.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Chair. We are looking at the safety performance for the group. Disabling injury frequency rate is just one of the measures that we use for safety in the company. It's measured on a 12-month rolling period, and we've seen a deterioration of about 11.4%, 0.98 vis-à-vis 0.88 the prior year. And this is mainly due to operations, mainly in our rail environment. That could be our Transnet freight rail, as well as our Transnet rail engineering environment. We've seen the number of disabling injuries increasing. And then another measure that we use is the employee fatalities that we track. If we look at the trend, we can actually see that we have not won the challenge there. We've suffered 12 employee fatalities in the year that we're reporting, vis-a-vis 8 in the prior year. And then when we do the root cause analysis, it's either standard operating procedures that are not followed, or maybe it relates to vehicle incidents, as well as to our rail environment that we are busy trying to address. On public fatalities, we also got a trend there. We are seeing a positive trend in terms of improvement of about 12.7%. And then the public fatalities are mainly in the level crossings, as well as also maybe people committing suicide. And we also have programs trying to address, and also having adverts trying to bring that awareness for public safety. And then the cost of loss, it was one of our worst year. It was one in 10 years in terms of the event, where we've actually seen our cost almost doubling to a billion rand compared to 501 million rand in the prior year. And then in that particular area, it was not necessarily the number of incidents, but it was more of the severity of the incidents, and where we were seeing incidents of more than 100 million per incident. In that area, we've also got programs that are being executed to turn around that performance. Thank you, Brian.
Chair, I'm going to ask the CFO to talk about the regulatory issues and the tariffs.
Thank you, Brian. The committee members would probably recall that as Transnet, we have two entities that are actually subject to economic regulation. That is the Transnet Ports Authority, Transnet National Ports Authority, and Transnet Pipelines. The Ports Authority is regulated by the Ports Regulator, and Transnet Pipelines by NERSA. You would also recall that in the pipelines environment, we had significant variability in the decisions that were being granted by the regulator prior to the current year. As you can see, as depicted in the graph there, we actually requested 11.86 for the year 2011, and we requested as Transnet an increase of 51.3%, and was only granted an increase of 11.86%. However, through very intense interaction with the regulator around the principles that he was applying to actually come up with the tariff increases, we've been able to narrow the gap between the regulator's view on the regulations and Transnet's interpretation, successfully so in that when we applied for 69% in the current year, we were actually awarded around 60% for a tariff increase. So I'm pleased to report back that the TPL tariff methodology and regime seems to be stabilizing, and that creates the platform for us to actually see an environment where we actually get stable, predictable tariffs that we actually get out of the regulator. On the TNPA side, or the National Ports Authority side, we're still in a position where we are requesting tariff increases greater than what the regulator is actually granting us. because the regulator seems to be granting us inflationary tariff increases. As you can see, in both years, we got 4% and 4.5% respectively. And the critical factor with respect to why we are getting this increase in our view is the fact that the fourth regulator does not have methodology that has been developed thus far that actually enables him to grant the tariff increases in terms of the regulations that have been stipulated. Transnet has actually submitted to the regulator our view of what the methodology should be for his consideration, and he has actually undertaken to actually take that through a public process in the current financial year, which again should bring some certainty around the tariff regime for the National Ports Authority probably in the next financial year.
Chair, with respect to skills development progress this year, between April and July, we have taken about 1,800 trainees, 60 of them in engineering, 181 technicians, 166 artisans, 1,125 sector-specific trainees, and about 40 chartered accountant trainees. We will confirm the number of jobs that have been created since the beginning of the year, because those still need to be calculated. On social investment, we have the Pelham Pepper Healthcare train, as you know, which is an 18-coach train which goes to rural communities and with medical staff on it, which is clinics, and it reaches about 45,000 patients and 118,000 learners through its outreach program. We are building a second Pelham Pepper, which will be commissioned in March 2012. We have rendered containerized assistance program, which addresses safety and security and social needs. We deliver police stations to SAPS through our old and unused containers. So we have delivered 15 satellite police stations, 9 police stations have been extended, and 2 community police forums have been built since 2009, and 15 multi-purpose centers built for the social development program. We have an education teacher development program, which is a new focus area, which is aligned with the Transnet Human Capital Strategy for developing engineering skills in South Africa. We have just started an employee volunteer program, which will encourage the employment of Transnet employees in community development. This employee volunteer program is going to start in the next couple of months. Sport development in rural areas and farm schools. This program is premised on sport participation being a positive contributor to health and education outcomes. And our focus codes are in athletics, chess, football, and netball, and it reaches approximately 60,000 learners annually. We have the SAFA Football School of Excellence, which is continuing to do well, and we have about 120 boys in the center who are being exposed to formal education as well as formal training in other life skills, but most importantly, football. Chair, on the pension fund progress update, what has happened there is that we have discussed the matter with the Transnet Pension Fund board. We have asked them to explore appropriate funding structures that do not necessarily involve exposing the Transnet balance sheet, and we think that it is possible to do that without additional funding, because the fund is in a surplus and there are ways in which they can change the investment of the asset of the fund to accommodate the required increases. They are working on developing these, and they have in fact asked for a meeting with the committee. I believe a letter was sent to the committee, because actually in terms of governance, the Transnet Pension Fund trustees are the people that are supposed to approve the rules and manage the assets in such a way that they can accommodate the increases. It is not the Transnet board, but the Transnet Pension Fund trustees. And so we have communicated this to them. They are working on it and have requested a meeting both with the department and with the committee to tell them about how they're going to take the net.
Which committee?
This committee. That's what I'm saying. And that is the conclusion of the message.
Okay.
Remember, see, you have it. Thank you to the Transnet team. I think it's precise, to the point, and accurate. It's over to you. Can I ask that we start? Please indicate your name to the committee secretary, or your indication that you want to put a question. He'll make the list. I follow the list in that order, and then I'll have my question as well. And then we can go round one, two questions per member. And if you have a question similar to the previous one, just link up with that so that you can't simply be able to cluster that and to say that it's the same question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you indeed for the presentation. My first question is on the gearing, what's the debt ratio? And my second question is by what you are putting forward here appears to be growth that is lower than the growth of what the country expect. If it is so, how did you derive at such a situation? And if I'm wrong, then of course correct me.
Honourable Borman.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to have a question on the CSD, the pension fund. But thank you. I think you have explained that quite well to us. I want to go to something that perhaps you've not mentioned in your presentation, but it's in your report. And I want to refer to the tip-offs hotline that you report on in your report. Just get there from page 53. And to say that the figure for 2011 is substantially up. Now, what months does that cover? And then I also would like to know if this initiative, which began in 2009, my understanding, is bearing fruit in that, you know, are you finding that you are rooting out corruption at all levels? And I think I would also like to know what level, when I talk about that, you know, is it top management? Is it across the board? Is it your lower paid workers? Where are you finding that you are rooting out? See, from the resignations, and also you have discharged some people. As a result of that. So I'd like a little bit of information, clarity on that, as to how you are dealing with that. And then, yes, I would like to go to your executive remuneration on page 222. I've got to get hold of that because I need to understand under your executive remuneration guaranteed, you've got amounts there, and I would like to refer to the Mr. Garner amount, and the obviously there's back pay involved there, and then when you turn to what is your incentive payment, you've got, I think I'm understanding correctly, an additional amount, and this applies also to Mr. Wells. So I would like some clarification. This obviously is in addition to the remuneration, executive remuneration. Some clarity on that. Thank you.
Mr. McQuinnell.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also welcome the very thoroughgoing presentation of this annual report. We have the benefit of Transnet and Eskom having co-sponsored the very excellent summer school last week for the portfolio committee, and that helps us to develop insight into the working. Two questions, Chairperson. I actually have six, but I'll limit myself to two. To obey your rule. Two quick questions. Number one, the 7.2 billion irregular expenditure is really troublous. I don't think you had time to actually unpack that. I would love the Chairperson to see that we should have a special section where you actually account to us as to this irregular expenditure. It's a huge amount of money. You know, the media, and I couldn't for the life of me understand how, with all the expertise and good leadership of Transnet, that we would have 7.2 billion in regular to of procurement, even if you do say that you do conduct your own internal audit and so on. But now I've got a third audit, there's an internal audit, there's an external audit, and there's also the AG of the whole country. Now, I can't understand how this actually escaped to those three levels. In terms of our oversight, we're not trying to micromanage, obviously, as we're exercising oversight, but I would love Chairperson, as a portfolio committee, to be satisfied that without gainsaying what you're saying, that those irregular to actually funds to be proper. That it's a contradiction, kind of an irregular expenditure being found to be out of their community. So I would love to future, but the portfolio committee must ask Transnet to actually come and present to us that aspect, because it's a very big sum, 7.2 billion, it's a lot of money. Number one. Number two, the Durban-Joburg multi-fuel product pipeline. we did get information from you as to where how far this proceeds in terms of clearance from the regulators. Now, I want to find out two things. Number one, what is this current cost? Because the cost is escalated exponentially. Is an open-ended escalation from year to year? What is it at the moment? Because it jumped from one amount to another quantum. Number two is, what I'm very happy to hear that you've cleared all the smooth, all the problems surrounding, it with respect of land claims, etc., etc. But then, when is the approximately predicted completion time of this very essential pipeline?
Mr. Khololo, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also thank the presentation from ESCOM. I've got two sorry. I always mix them up. From Transnet. I've got two questions, Chair, but I've got also comments. I don't know if it's allowed to comment. Okay. Yeah. With the export coal volumes reflect marginal growth from the prior year, despite a loss of 3.1 million tons due to the May 2010 industrial action, derailments and the longer than planned shutdown of the line due to the industrial action. I just wanted to find out from Transnet as to how far have they gone in trying to harmonize the relationship between yourselves and the union, so that this industrial action does not occur again, whereby a lot of goods get stuck in the port. That would be the first one. And the second one, Chair, is on the new multi-product pipeline also. In that, you are saying that you are confident that the cost of the project will remain within the approved estimated amount of 23.4 billion rand. Are you telling us that is it going to remain the same so that tomorrow we don't see it skyrocketing? That will be, I just wanted the assurance from that one. And then, of course, a comment about your good work that you're doing on your CSI. I think you're doing a very, very beautiful work. Thank you very much for that. And then, of course, another comment will be on the what you call on the human capital, whereby I see that 0.8% of the people living with disability, I think we need to improve on that one a bit. Thank you very much.
Honorable Sonto.
Peterson, thank you very much. congratulating you on your successful workshop that you held, which I missed, unfortunately. I will comply with the requirements and ask two questions. When it was not classified information.
Don't be sidetracked. Ask your question.
On your slide 17, I will confine myself to the presentation. I'm looking at the fact that we're moving from rail from road to rail with delight, and I'm sure that is very much applauded. But one would want to look at the interdepartmental efforts. Interdepartmental efforts to harmonize transportation of these commodities by DPE, for an example, and DMR, whether they do come to the party in terms of assisting youth in that area. That is one. The second one would be on your slide 32, your safety area. One is not very happy looking at your disabling injuries and the employee facilities, and also at the derailment. One would definitely say that it's nothing to write home about. Now the question would be, recognizing the efforts employed already. One, on your public safety program, who are you partnering with so that you take the word further into the community? And internally, what stringent measures are you devising so that employee fatalities and injuries can be reduced? Thank you very much.
Liberal van Dalen.
Yes, I want to ask a question around the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and the irregular expenditure that was occurred during the year. Now, I see in the report it talks about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of about 46 million rand, and then losses due to criminal conduct, 133 million rand, and then irregular expenditure, it was 8.3 billion rand. It is about half of your capital spent amount that was spent irregularly. That is quite a big amount. And although the report says it's all been addressed and it's regularized, or you didn't say anything about it. It is quite concerning that a big company like Transnet has not got things in place to deal with something like this, and they let it happen and have to fix it afterwards. I mean, you have a lot of legal people working for you that should have warned you. I mean, don't you have early warning assistance on this? So I would like to hear something about that, and you can spend some time on that answer, please. Then I want to know why the board of Transnet is dragging its feet with the implementation of the pension fund, the second defined pension fund payout. I mean, Parliament have told you to pay it, and the Minister of Treasury, Pravin Gordhan, he has said the 15th of last month, he told Parliament that they have now given a directive to Transnet to pay it. You come up with a story that you have now told the board they must find the money somewhere else, the pension fund itself, and everything else. That is not what Parliament told you. Parliament told you to pay them, so pay them. I mean, that is what we told you. Otherwise, you are in contempt of Parliament.
Just put your question.
Yes. Don't pass the buck, I want to say. And then, but I want to know why they are not paying it. They are coming with a lot of story. That's my question. I want to give it some... You know, people also get old. You will also get old, and you
Mr.
will also Fandala, be dependent on pay.
What is your second question?
This is my second question.
Thank you.
But I'm not finished with it yet. I just wanted to tell them that they're also going to get old, but obviously they're not going to be affected because they get too much money. So the poor people on the bottom, they are the people that are suffering here. And you must remember these people are dying at quite a rate. And the longer you drag your feet, obviously the cheaper for yourself it will be.
I think you've made your point.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Honorable Greiner?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, on the subject of money, I mean, I think we do need to bring up the issue of incentives and bonuses. And this is an issue which the committee's been tasked with for a long time, not just with Transnet, but with all state-owned enterprises, and the issue of when bonuses get awarded. And I'd like to know what the response from the board and the CEO is in terms of when a bonus should be paid, because I see the CEO has been quoted as saying that an incentive scheme is to encourage correct behavior. Now, that isn't my understanding of a bonus. My understanding of a bonus is for spectacular work, spectacular performance, and then a bonus can be awarded. But looking at the list under the incentive scheme here, I mean, we're paying out huge amounts, millions, to a number of individuals on an incentive scheme. Is this because of superior performance? We need to know this. And on that basis as well, when I look at the performance indicators in the annual report, I only see you having reached the target for, I think, about 2 out of the 20 in terms of that. Some of them you've fallen way short, some of them you've almost reached. But, I mean, what underpins the strategy then in terms of how you award incentive schemes towards members? And then just on that point as well, I mean, if you take, for example, the issue of Siyabonga Gama and the fact that he was paid 10 million rand when he was suspended, he was then fired, and when he was reinstated, he was paid a further 2.5 million rand, which was based on apparently his performance 3 years prior. That was a performance bonus. But if you look at his performance over that period, Transnet Freight and Rail certainly didn't qualify for a performance bonus. So I'm just interested to see what the strategy and the principles behind this is. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Can I just add the two questions that before I hand over to Transnet? I want to refer you to the report of the directors, your page 216, and more specifically Transnet Freight Rail, and it's under service delivery, on-time departures and on-time arrivals. Now, if there's one downside in this excellent integrated annual report, it is this point. Your targets that you put there for 2011 and your actual target, it is way, way below the shortfall of the target. Can I just ask you, what plans do you have are in place to correct the situation? Because the gap between your target and the actual, both on the on-time departures and on-time arrivals, for all your general freight business, your export coal, and for your iron ore export, is quite substantial. If you can just explain to the committee what plans are in place to make it a better situation when we are around next time. And my second question links up with the question on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If I look at the PFMA, the definition of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it says, it means expenditure which was made in vain and would have been avoided had reasonable care been exercised. That is a PFMA. And if I look at on your page 215, it seems to me that it's not only the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of the above the materiality limit. There's also amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 46.88 million rand involving 110 items below the materiality limit. So in total, if I'm correct and I add it together, the total fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the year under review was 72.88 million. And I think we need to address it in a very serious matter because this is a report of the Auditor General. And the question will be then, and I see you've on your slide 17, I think, alluded to it, but surely there there must be, the question must be asked whether any criminal or disciplinary steps have been taken and whether any losses have been recovered or written off. This is quite a serious downside, second downside of this report of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Mr. Molefe, over to you.
Yeah. I only started working for Transnet in February. Now I feel like I'm going to prison. and the board started in December, and most of these managers here were in acting positions until March when they were appointed. But in terms of the gearing, gearing is at the moment at 40%, or 40.1%. Our gearing for purposes of the covenants on the loan agreements is 50%. So we still have quite a good headroom for gearing to borrow some more. So this is debt to total assets or debt to equity. We expect the gearing to deteriorate as the capital expenditure goes forward into the next 5 years. To about 45-46%, which we are quite comfortable with. So, gearing, we're not too concerned about gearing. In terms of what has been reported as the performance of Transnet last year relative to what the country expects of Transnet and what the economy needs, we would agree that the performance in respect of the demand that is out there. We have not been able to meet the demand for freight rates. We have not been able to meet the demand that is out there to transport goods from the hinterland to the ports and to transport goods within the country by rail as the market would like us to. And those are issues that we will be addressing, and I'm happy to say that in at the end of this month, which will be the end of the first half of the financial year, where we will make reports on the half-yearly results of Transnet. And I'm happy that we will be able to report some progress with respect to what we're doing with respect to meeting the expectations of the economy. If we compare what we did last year and what we've been able to do in the first half of this year. So last year and the year before, the problem started in 2008 with the downturn in the economy when our operations had to be scaled down because there was no demand. But now as the economy started picking up again in 2009 and 2010-11, Transnet lagged behind a little bit, and we are now catching up with the downscaled activities from 2008 when we had a crisis. With respect to the TIPOS, I'd like to ask Roderick to talk about the TIPOS. He's our internal auditor.
Thank you, Brian. I think just again, as the Honourable Member referred to the table on page 53 of the integrated report, it provides some statistics reported on specifically around the TIPOS anonymous lines and how various calls that have come through that line have been dealt with in their different categories. It would be important, I think, for the committee to understand the governance process that operates around the TIPOS anonymous lines. There is a fraud working group that is established at each of the operating divisions. In most instances, that FWD, as it is called, is chaired by the operating divisional CEO and sometimes by the CFO. Several members, senior members of the business sit in that committee, as well as members of the group tip-off committee. Internal audit also sits in that committee. Now, the purpose of that committee is to consider calls that come through the TIPOS anonymous line that line is again independently run and monitored by Deloitte. So the calls come through an independent line, are then channeled into the fraud working group, are looked into in the first instance through a preliminary investigation to assess whether there is any merit to the tip-off that is being called through or not. So preliminary investigations are conducted. At the end of that preliminary investigation, the fraud working group, based on the outcomes of the preliminary investigation, then make a decision as to whether it is a founded or an unfounded line. So to come back to that table on page 53, what you can see there is a pick-up in the total hotline allegations from 631 in 2010 to 846 in 2011, an increase of 34%. Very much a part of Transnet's fraud risk management plan is activities that are intended to increase the awareness of the tip-off's anonymous line, with the intention that more and more of the employees are aware of this mechanism and are able to report through the tip-off line anything that they deem to be suspicious. So almost contrary, an increase in the allegations coming through that line, on the one hand, is actually a positive indication that more employees across the organization are aware of the line and are feeling comfortable to channel any suspicious activity they've observed through the line. We then need to go further into the table then to monitor what has typically happened to the calls that have come through that line. And what you'll find is of the founded items, that has increased from 136 to 183. In percentage terms, it is consistent with the prior year. So what we're saying is even though the total number of calls that have come into the tip-off anonymous line has grown, as a percentage of the total calls, the number of unfounded items has grown as well. But that is a decision that is made by the fraud working group at an operating division. Once a call comes through, they consider the report, they conduct a preliminary investigation, and based on the findings of that preliminary investigation, decide to either halt the matter there or indeed to extend that into a much deeper investigation. And again, there is a statistics here on how that has performed year on year. Perhaps my last comment would maybe be to look at the final warnings. If you look at 2009, that has gone from 25. It has increased in 2010 and has remained at the 41-42 level. In terms of number of dismissals, that has increased from 10 to 14. And so our observation as internal audit would be that as a mechanism for monitoring suspicious activity in the group, that the tip-off anonymous line and the fraud working group that attaches to that does appear to be an effective mechanism for, one, ensuring increased awareness around the use of the line, around ethical behavior through the group, which is a very core part of the fraud risk management plan, and then a very robust means of monitoring and tracking any investigations that do come through and how those end up. Thank you.
Okay, you must remember we have 55,000 employees, and some of the tip-offs that come through are like, my supervisor wouldn't approve my leave, so I think my supervisor is corrupt and he doesn't like me, and so on and so forth. So from 55,000 employees, a lot of things are possible from anywhere in the country at any one point in time. But there are very good tip-offs that still come through the line. I'd like to ask Mr. Singh to deal with the issue of irregular expenditure as well as the fruitless expenditure.
Thank you, Brian. I think indeed the committee's concern is valid in terms of the seriousness of the nature of these breaches. We indeed seriously take these breaches as seriously as what the committee has outlined their concerns to be. We welcome the detailed interaction that the committee has requested. And I think in order to give the committee some comfort around
the circumstances that gave rise to these contraventions. If you look at the irregular expenditure by, specifically the irregular expenditure of $7.2 billion, there are four main contracts that have given rise to that. So it's not a proliferation of contracts that gives you an understanding that there's a complete breakdown of the systems that we've put around the organization to control these expenditure. It relates to a contract with a certain construction contract. It relates to a contract that we had undertaken to provide for the services for certain rail, and it also relates to certain project management contracts, eight project management contracts that we've entered into. And these contracts were entered into some time ago. Actually, they were entered into, I think, in 2004, 2005, thereabouts. And at that point in time, the procurement processes and practices were not as robust as they have been now currently in the organization. And the PSMA processes, similarly, were not as robust as they are currently now. The processes that we've actually put in place now, as we've mentioned via the internal audit report and the external audit report, have significantly been improved since then to now. And that's the reason why we've actually highlighted these issues only now, because of the processes that we've put in place. That actually has given us the indication that these things had been irregularly concluded in the past. And when we say they've been irregularly concluded, I think let's also put that into perspective, is that we have set down certain minimum criteria that we would like the organization to follow to enable us as an SOE to comply with the requirements of the PFMA as it relates to procurement activity. So, for example, we need to go out and open tender, you know, and all those type of things. And when we concluded these contracts way back when, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, those processes were not followed. So it relates to a very early stage of the procurement process around tendering activities, evaluation of contracts, and conclusion of contracts. So that's the nature of the irregular expenditure. And the comfort that we can give the committee that the significant improvement, as outlined by internal audit, has been actually recorded between 2004 and today. The contracts that have been reviewed by external audit, some 104 contracts to the value of $22 billion, have not indicated that there is a consistent trend of these type of activities continuing in the business. So from that perspective, I think, yes, the contributions have occurred. We brought it to the attention of the oversight committee. But from a management perspective, we're quite comfortable that the processes and controls that were put in place to, one, monitor compliance to PFMA, and, two, to monitor compliance with the processes and policies as it relates to procurement contracts, is in place and is robust. So we should not see irregular expenditure of this size going forward, certainly not. As it relates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, yes, the chairperson, honorable chairperson.
Mr.
Makwena?
I'm not happy.
Sorry, just a moment. Can we just ask them to complete? Then we're going to have an opportunity for clarity, for a follow-up, or so. So just make your point. We're not going to lose it. But otherwise, we're going to break in like we started the spring school. And we will never... Let's put a moratorium on follow-up.
As a business, you
all. It's okay. Thank you.
As it relates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the Honourable Chairperson is correct in terms of his analysis, and I'd like to also assure the Chairperson and the committee that each element of fruitless and wasteful expenditure does get followed through to a disciplinary inquiry and through to a criminal case, because that is a requirement of the PFMA as well. So each one of those is actually tracked and monitored on a monthly basis through the organisation, and by very nature of the criminal cases, they take an extended period of time to finalize, but the disciplinary cases, certainly for the individuals that are still within the organization, there is a disciplinary process that actually is followed for each one of those fruitless and wasteful expenditure cases. And to the extent that we do have an ability to recover any of these issues from the insurance cover, we also pursue fidelity claims against the insurance company for any of these issues that may arise.
Okay, I can add that in the processes at Transnet, there has also been a culture of condoning activities where officials have not followed procedure. So a more senior person can condone it by just signing a letter that says the activity is condoned. And from this year, from I think March this year, we have stopped all condonements. Nobody has authority to condone anything. The board has said only the chief executive officer can condone. And when such condonement is done, there must be disciplinary action. And what we have seen in the last 6 months is a massive drop in condonement. In fact, I think there have only been one or two, and both of them followed with final written warnings, disciplinary action. On the question of executive remuneration for guaranteed pay and incentives for Mr. Gama and Mr. Wells, let me explain that at Transnet, we have a system whereby the incentives are withheld. A portion of the incentive, so if a person is awarded a bonus by the remuneration committee and by through a process where they have key performance indicators and then they are assessed and then the bonus is awarded on the basis of the KPIs. A portion of the bonus is retained by the company. How much is it? Yeah, but how much of it? So 50% of the bonus is retained by the company.
And well, there's a correction. It's rent to rent because there's a person here. I don't want them to misquote you.
Yeah. Okay. Rent for one rent for one rent. Although I said 50%. Okay, one rent for one rent. So rent-to-rent is retained by the company. Now, if the person continues to perform over the following 3 years, the money is paid 3 years later to the person. So it is a retention scheme. But if within the 3 years you resign, you lose the money, unless if there is an agreement or there is your reason for leaving the company is for whatever reason. For example, at the termination of a contract which was terminating. So it doesn't mean that you were leaving the company, but the contract that you had with the company is terminating. Then the money that is due for you from 3 years ago, from 2 years ago, from last year, that was not paid to you, is then paid out in a lump sum. Now, what that happens is that it is then reported in the year that it is paid. So what? Because it was retained. That year you performed, and then a portion was retained to be paid out 3 years later. Now, what happened in the case of Mr. Gama is that he had money due to him from when? 2008. He was in the company, I can't talk about the merits of the performance assessment at the time, but there was a performance assessment and he was awarded the bonus and a portion of the bonus was retained. And then last year he was suspended and then the board decided that because he did not steal any money, because he was not found guilty of dishonesty, what actually happened there was that he had approved an amount that was above his authority. But none of that money was coming to him. There was no evidence left that there was any act of corruption. The board felt that the sanction of dismissal is too harsh, that he should be given a final written warning that he must not do it again. So he was reinstated. But when he was reinstated with his benefits. So the money that was due to him then at the bank, 2008 and 2009, was paid when he was reinstated. And that is why the figure looks big in for his remuneration. And then what the Sunday Times then says is that Mr. Gama was paid while he was away. But I tried to explain that this is not the money for when he was away. The money for when he was away, there was also a decision that he should be paid his basic salary for when he was away, but he was not paid the bonus for while he was away. That was not paid. But these are bonuses from when that were retained a few years ago that would have been due to him in any way when the 3-year period lapses. And that is why the amounts look like that. For Mr. Wells was paid the base salary. A part of his bonus was withheld because the board felt that because of the NNPP and because of one or two other issues, they felt that some of the money must be retained and not paid to him, and there must be a hearing as to why the money must be paid to him. But Mr. Wells left Transnet, and then when he left Transnet, he declared a dispute, but he has since withdrawn the dispute, so the money will not be paid. I don't know if the chairman wants to comment on that.
Can I correct something on the retention of the company of a certain portion of Mr. Wells' salary or bonus? It does not relate to the NNPP or to anything. It related to an interpretation between himself and the company on what was due to him. But post his departure, he then agreed that our interpretation was correct, and he withdrew the demand for that additional amount. It has got nothing to do with any wrongdoing or anything in terms of why we retained the amount that we retained. Thank you, Manif.
Sorry, Donald, it was not NNPP. I'm sorry. Withdraw that. Because I know that's going to be the headline tomorrow. The pipeline cost at the moment is estimated to be 23 billion, as you correctly point out, and that is an amount that was approved last year by the board, and we expect to stay within the 23 billion during this financial, and that will be the total cost of the pipeline. There are no indications at the moment that we will exceed the budgeted amount of 23 billion. The pipeline will be commissioned in December, and as Moira reported earlier, we are putting diesel into the pipeline, and it will be working from December. What will be remaining between December this year? What will be remaining between 2012 and 2014 is the building of certain stations. With respect to the pipeline, I think that the bigger picture is that, in fact, although it's enormous cost, but the pipeline is finalized, and it is one of the best, I think, in the world that we're going to have between Johannesburg and Devon, pumping a lot of liquids. On export coal volumes and the harmonization of labor relations, we had a two-week strike last year which brought the company to a standstill, which is what is being reported on here. During this year, we were the first to conclude the negotiations with labor and settled quite early. I think we settled in the month of March already. We had already settled. And so when the strike season came, Transnet had already settled, but we were affected by other strikes, like, for example, the liquid the liquid petroleum strikes, employees, and other strikes also affected us. But our employees, this year we did not have a strike, and we hope that going forward we can convince the unions to agree to multi-year agreement. But I think that we have very good relations with labor at the moment. On the interdepartmental efforts between DPE and I think it's Department of Transport, DMR, I think the relationships between DPE and DMR are very good. We don't get involved, but our relationship with DPE is very good. They give us good guidance, and we generally allow DPE to lead discussions with other government departments that involve us. But I think that they have very good relationships with other departments, and we certainly have a much improved relationship with the Department of Public Enterprises. I don't know if...
Adam from DP, Adam Sira. As Brian has said, on an ad hoc basis, when there are specific interventions required with DMR, the DP would take that forward and address that on a specific issue.
the issue of disabilities was raised with us as the Transnet earlier by the committee in another meeting before. It is a matter that we are taking up. In fact, we're having at our next EXCO meeting, I've asked for a report from all the operating divisions about the employment of disabled persons, as well as the strategies by each division on how we're going to improve that statistic, that number, and increasing the number of disabled people. And I hope that by the end of this financial year, when we report on our financial statement, on our annual report for this year, we will have a better number, because it is something that we are consciously going to pursue as a company. On safety and derailments, you know, on the issue of derailments, we did an analysis of the derailments that have happened in the last 3 years. The bulk of the derailments actually happen in privately owned yards, because what we do is we deliver wagons to a site for loading. So that site is normally a privately owned yard. And so we deliver the train and the wagon, and we leave it for a time for the company to load onto the wagons. And then we come back and fetch the train. But the maintenance of the infrastructure in those yards has usually not been good, and they do not have automated points. And sometimes the people that they use to drive our trains inside the yard are not properly qualified for what they call. They're called funkies. So we are forced with banning the use of funkies on our trains. We will go in and drive the trains in the yard. But the majority of the derailments actually happen in the yard. There are derailments that have happened outside the yard on the main lines. Those derailments have usually been very spectacular and have been as a result of poor maintenance of the infrastructure. Sometimes maintenance of the wagons, where the wheels of the wagon are getting finished. We are introducing scheduled maintenance of both the infrastructure, the wagons, and the locomotives. And in fact, this year, I think that we're going to be able to report much lower derailments on our lines. There have been one or two derailments, but the number has dropped significantly in the last 6 months. But that is, I think, due to an increased conscientization on and a safety culture, but more importantly, better maintenance. We have ramped up our maintenance activities over the last 6 months. We shut down the coal line, for example. Usually we shut down the coal line for 10 days for maintenance. This year we shut it down for 20 days. And the iron ore line has also just been shut for 10 days for maintenance as well. So we take maintenance very seriously. They walk the line and ensure that it is in good condition to receive the trains. On the TSDDF, Mr. Van Dalen says that the Minister of Finance has instructed us to pay the money. That would make that a money bill. So I'm not aware that there is a money bill that instructs us to pay the money. But from a good corporate governance point of view, the TSDBF is being managed by a board of trustees that manage all the financial affairs as well as the rules of the TSDBF. So the improvement in the conditions of the fund or the benefits of the fund is in fact a change in the rules of the current rules of the fund. The only people in terms of the law that can do that are the trustees. So we have impressed on the trustees that there is a... No, we don't have to give approval. The trustees are independent trustees. We can't instruct them to do anything because they are independent trustees. So what has happened is we have impressed on them that there is a need to review the rules, and could they please consider reviewing the rules. And they have received that positively and said that is correct. We think that the rules must be reviewed and improved. But to review the rules, you must fund the additional or the new conditions of the fund. And we have said they must as far as possible utilize the surpluses that they have in the fund. And they must present us with models and options on how they're going to do that. But also, it can also be done by changing the way that they invest the fund, to invest it more aggressively to get higher returns so that they can afford the higher payment. Transnet, in terms of the law, only steps in when there is a deficit in the fund. At the moment, there is no deficit. There is a surplus. We think that they can accommodate the new conditions in that surplus. They must just present us with a model of how they're going to do it. But we have also said, you know, we are being accused that we are refusing to increase the benefits for the members. So you, the trustees, must come out now and say that we are the responsible people and we are going to do it. And so that is why we have recommended that they should have a meeting with the committee. And they say that they have sent a letter to the committee asking for a meeting so they can explain the position of the fund and what the fund will be able to afford and what the fund will be doing. But there is no rule that Transnet must increase the benefit of the members. It is the trustees, Mr. Fandel.
Thank you, Mr. Melofi. You're finished. You covered all the questions.
There's one issue on director's report on on-time departures and arrivals. Chair, this is a very embarrassing thing. I mean, our trains are up to 180 hours late sometimes, which is a lot of time. And we report that last year the trains were late that much. We have set up a special committee with TFR specialists to look at how we can improve this, and we are introducing a scheduled railway, which means that if a train is set to depart at 3 o'clock, it will depart at 3 o'clock. In a lot of instances, the trains do not depart on time because of our own drivers, our own systems, and so on. But in other instances, and this is also quite a huge number of instances, it is because of the customers. So when we arrive to load and the customer is not ready, and then the customer will start loading 7-8 hours later and so on, and the train is 10 hours late, we report it as an on-time departure, and obviously on the other side, as a not on-time. And then on the other side, it is also reported as a not on-time arrival. So this will involve saying to our customers that, you know, when a train leaves at 3 and you haven't finished loading, it will leave, but you'll pay for that train as if it was full. Because the trains must run on time. And so that is what the discussions that we're going to have with our customers. But we intend to show a much better statistic on these efficiencies. I can report that in the last 6 months, we have an index of efficiencies that we measure so that all the efficiencies can be reduced to one number. And in the last 6 months, we have had a quite a sizable improvement on the Transnet operational efficiencies from last year during the same period. So from April to August, compared to last year, April to August, we show quite an improvement on operational efficiencies. But I think that at the end of September, we have an announcement of our half-yearly results, and we'll be able to share these with the yourselves and the public about performance in the last 6 months.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Chairman, there's one small item that I think we've not properly answered. Mr. Sonto asked a question on public safety partnering, and if I'm not sure who's going to handle that.
Thank you, sir. On the issue of public safety, I think as a company we've got a number of programs that we've partnered with, for instance, Rail Safety Regulator.
because rail is also one of our biggest business when it comes to safety performance. We've partnered with the municipalities as well as the communities and the public along the railway and the encroachment near the railway lines. We've also done some school programs in terms of awareness back to school and also towards the festive season, just to create the public awareness on rail safety. Maybe some of you have seen also the advert on level crossing that is on TV, just creating the awareness for the public that it's really safe to stop than to try and beat the train because you'll never win. And year to date, we're starting to see the public fatalities, you know, really dropping, and we think maybe that advert also has something to do with that. And RSR has also commended Transnet, you know, for that program because it's also in various radio stations, you know, throughout the country. So that's the part of our public. And then the other agencies, the road agencies, you know, to make sure that even in certain areas where the people don't stop, they can also allow to get the speed humps and so on, especially in the remote areas. And those programs are throughout the year. To us, it's important for the safety turnaround because in order for us to also get the insurances covering us, they want to make sure that there's evidence on the ground that something is done in terms of public safety. Then internally for employees, we've got a number of programs, and then Brian touched on the maintenance and also on the culture, but also as well on the discipline and consequence management. We've also do benchmarks with international companies so that we can actually facilitate and close the gap in terms of the learning curve, you know, what other countries have done. Thank you.
Chair, just for the information of the committee, about in April that, or in May, two small children were hit by a train outside Cape Town in Paarl. What's the name of the township? At Mbekweni. And we committed to build a wall between, because there is an informal settlement right on the tracks in Paarl, which is very dangerous, and the people do not have ablution facilities, so they have to cross the line to use the toilet on the other side in the bush. And what we have decided to do is to build a wall, but also to negotiate with the council to move the people to a safer place. So we are involved in those negotiations, but today, after this meeting, we are all going to Mbekweni because the building of the wall started yesterday to see if we can talk to the communities, because there will be a number of people that are closer to the line that will have to move to allow for the wall to be built as a matter of priority. So we will be going there, in fact, today, this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the forthrightness and straightforward questions that you answer. This is what we appreciate from the leadership of Transnet. You get tough questions, you answer. If there's problems, you acknowledge. If there are achievements, you highlight. We really appreciate the attitude of Transnet, really be forthright to the committee. I'm going to ask whether there are follow-ups or whether there are new questions. We're doing well with time. We, according to our agreement, we're going to have another 1 hour. So I'm asking you to indicate to me whether you have new questions. Just indicate to me who has new questions. New? Or whether follow-up questions. Can I just ask, just to put a little bit order to it, I'm going to go around to each member again, but that we don't reopen an issue that has already been answered properly. That I'm going to rule out of order, because some of the issues have been answered. You may differ with your opinion on the answer, but the issue has been answered. So can I allow you to ask the follow-up questions or a new question? The same rule, two questions, and we go through the round again, and let's see. There are some issues, what worries me, honorable members, there are issues that we haven't addressed as yet or asked questions. Cable theft is one of the issues, and I'm worrying that we are going to go into the same issue and rehearse and rehash all the time. I'm going to allow members already. Again, Honorable September.
Chair, thank you again. Of course, I'll seek your guidance on what I'm going to say now, which is a matter that was answered, but nevertheless, I think this part hasn't been entertained, and that is, yes, of course, thank you to the answer on the on the frivolous expenditure, but I think that, Chair, on this matter, and I think now and in the future, we have to follow the entirety of the Public Finance Management Act. So whether we get the answer now or not, what we would require is, because in any event, you see, this matter will end up by SCOPA also, and then we will have a conversation with them again. And I think we should have a resolution in this meeting about this matter, because it's about the law that we have enacted in this parliament. And so on the frivolous expenditure, I would say that we require an answer from the executive authority, and it's two in this instance, DPE and the Treasury, on this matter. And we will have to satisfy ourselves whether indeed the entire prescripts of the law have been followed in relation to the frivolous expenditure. That's the one that I wanted to say. That's a statement, it's not a question. Now my two questions. The first one I want to know is, while we appreciate that you are doing quite a bit in upscaling training for apprenticeships, but can you enlighten us, you continue to have a shortage of train drivers. Now, why are we not having sufficient investment in that instance, in the freight rail one? And then my second one, Chair, is am I correct that it seems like you still are following an old decision which this government is not in support of, and that is in the area of cold storage, dry docks, the entire maritime industry, and the frail the lines there. It appears that you still want to privatize these. Please tell me it is not so. Thank you, Jen.
Can I ask the members just to get to your two questions, because we want to give each member a second chance. Honourable Boardman.
Yes, I'm going to be quite brief. Relating to your vacancies, and to commend you on what you have done in filling those, because where we have vacancies, we have insecurities. And so my question is, your chief financial officer, I think that's the only one now that you have as an acting position. Could you give some indication? I know you're in a process, but how long you are thinking that is still going to take, and perhaps what the problems are related to that. Thank you. Can I just make a comment, because that was only one question? And that is to say, as a result of the spring school that we had, I really want to commend you for your whole procurement process and that new thing that you're going into, the central procurement and the localization and the skills training and all of that. I think that is an amazing, if you want to call it a project, I call it a project. And we look forward to watching how that develops. I think it's incredible. Thank you.
I think Honourable Bowman speaks on behalf of the committee. We were really very impressed on what you're doing on procurement and the business-like approach that you're taking there. Thank you. Bueno?
Yes, sir, President, a follow-up or new questions? So, okay, let me try and accommodate your ruling. One little follow-up and two questions. Number one, the follow-up question, let me just make a small statement. Nobody doubts the leadership of Mr. Mugolazi, Chairperson, Mr. Brian Mugolazi, CEO, excellent leadership, and your credentials are almost impeccable. The questions that we're asking are not asking us things. They are aimed at assuaging our consciences, members of parliament, excellent oversight. Now, this irregular expenditure, Mr. Mugolazi is trying to accommodate us by saying, is that because of the tradition of condonement. And I'm very impressed with the fact that you have not brought the whole thing. But you see, you cannot just sweep it under the carpet like that. Because you see, I'm surprised that the Auditor General has not put it down. There are three levels of policy. I'm not going to put myself. There was an excellent mechanism of internal audit installed there. Then there's an external audit. And there is
the aging of the whole country. Now, it escapes my little mind how those audits could have not seen the staggering irregularity of almost 8 billion. It's 8 billion, 8 billion. It's not even 8 million. Even if it's 8 million, that's 8 million too much. 8 billion is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Now, we cannot sit here and become nice boys and girls and say, oh, no, you know, the report is excellent. But what bedeviled it? This lining on them is this thing. And you are new in coming in 6 months, and you've done very excellent. You've done excellent. You shouldn't say excellent issue. But then the people who are responsible for this condonement, they must actually come and account to this portfolio committee, because this whole about the fiduciary duty. I mean, it's our job. We've been elected. These are public assets. I'm
translating this. I think you've made your point. Thank you.
So, the point I'm trying to make, Chairperson, is that now, we need to have those people that not to come and crucify them, but they must actually come and account to the committee how they actually went about condoning, you know, this derelict of 8 billion. Right, that's the point I'm making. Just a follow-up. There are two questions. Muha, related to the post. Muha, just information. We have been struggling to have an anchor tenant. Now, we succeeded now to have an anchor tenant, number two, is the National Post Authority. There was some dispute, person, in terms of ownership or jurisdiction between Department of Transport and Department of Public Enterprises as to the jurisdictional authority of the port. I want to find out how far that process has gone. I assume that there could be some legislation that is required of us to share your passwords to regularize that. Finally, what is the net asset value of Transnet? If one is close one's eyes and say we are theoretically selling Transnet, what is the net asset value?
Honorable Kololo,
thank you very much, Chair. The first round was very nice. I've got two questions for the second round. Do you remember GIPSA? I just wanted to check as to how has Transnet benefited from this initiative of GIPSA? If Transnet is still part of that program, that would be the first one. And the second one is on this cable test. I don't know if you contemplate employing more people, for instance, on the tracks, along the tracks, actually, to look at the question of the cable test. Because in the winter school that we had, we had some Germans there who told us that in Germany they employ more people who move along the tracks, and even the communities that reside. Can you?
What does somebody just switch off your cell phone, especially close to the mic set on?
Yeah. No, it's not mine.
Okay.
Well, not mine. Yeah, actually, the McKenzie, what you call it, consultants, actually, they told us.
Just speak in the mic. Just speak in the mic.
Yeah. The McKenzie, what you call consultants, they told us about a very beautiful initiative that is done in Germany, whereby, it's not mine now, whereby they employ a lot of people who are looking at the railway tracks, who are looking specifically on the question of the cable belt. They also involve the local communities who are residing along those tracks, actually to be part of that. I was trying to check if you could maybe think of that strategy. I think it could work very, very, very big. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Sonto.
You see, there's no doubt that you and your team are very, very passionate about complying with the elements of LRA. But allow me not to assume. When we were appraised on the human capital, you told us the number, the improvement that you have made on your generally black employees. But one should not assume that you have them in every rank of the ladder. One would want to be appraised on that. I know the detail is sometimes not very necessary, but that information is necessary. One would want to understand whether you have from those employees, people who are occupying high levels of office. Thank you. The second one, in order to augment your efforts, what criteria do you use to identify your buzzers? I'm interested in those 52 engineering buzzers that you have granted. One would want to check whether you have taken that in line with the passion that you are projecting insofar as addressing these issues. Thank you very much.
Mr. Van Damme, Honorable Van Damme.
Yes, thank you. I have two questions, and they are interrelated. And they speak to this on page 68 of your report about the top 10 strategic risks that you have. Now, if you look at this chart, there are quite a few in the red, which is will have a catastrophic effect on Transnet, and it most definitely will happen. It's just when it will happen in that category. Number one is the acts of theft, derailment, poor application of technology, and non-compliance with standard operating procedures. Now, I see that is at the group executive level, and the board level is doing that. But when you look at the page just after it, it talks about cable theft. And it says, well, you know, it's business as usual. We continue to address the challenges through partnerships, security clusters, and proactive use of our intelligent software. Obviously, the software and intelligence is not working, but you are not doing anything extra on it. And it's one of your major, major catastrophic events that can cripple Transnet. And you are not seeing to address that. And then you look at this top 10 strategic risks, and you go down to number 10, which is a medium one. It's also the likelihood of happening is very, very good. It's very good of happening. It's also just a matter of time. And it's human capital. A lack of organizational structure with clear accountability together with skilled labor force, inadequate succession planning, and potential strike action. Now, this is quite a significant point that is made here. And I think we should spend a day, Mr. Chairman, on this. That Transnet come back to us and tell us what they are doing about it, because it doesn't seem like they are addressing it. And, you know, it's very important. It says here in their own report it's going to be catastrophic if it happens. So, you know, where can we assist, and why are they not doing anything about it? Thank you.
Honorable Greiner.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a follow-up, and it's because I really need clarity on this issue, and I don't think that I received it in the initial answer, around the incentive scheme. I mean, essentially, are you saying that when we look at the figures here in the incentive schemes that are given in this annual report, where there's bonuses of $3.5 million and things like that being awarded, we need to go back 3 years and look at what their performance was 3 years ago according to the KPIs and assess whether these bonuses then are justified in terms of that? Because it makes it very difficult for us as well. You know, as a committee and as part of insurance, you have oversight. We essentially have to be able to defend public enterprises out to the public. And if we don't have a basis in which we can assess whether these incentive schemes are in fact justified or not, it makes our task very, very difficult. And, you know, in terms of where the performance of Transnet was 3 years ago, I still think it can remain in question as to whether these kinds of incentives are in fact justified. And so I really am arguing for more transparency in the way bonuses are awarded and the process that is used in that. And in that regard as well, I mean, what you are saying to us here as well is that you want to retain skilled staff. And so you're saying that you award your bonus, but you only pay half now and half later after 3 years if you stay in the company. But surely it's not just that you want them to stay in the company. It's that you want them to perform well continually over those next 3 years. So why is it then, in the case of Mr. Garma, who one board fires and another board overturns it, but then sees fit to give a written warning for bad behavior during that period, but it's still justified to give him a 2.5 million rand bonus from 3 years ago? I need to understand what the thinking is behind that, because really this is an issue we have to sort out across our SOEs, and we're still waiting for the remuneration policy, which Public Enterprises has, I heard, completed. But we really need to fix these kinds of issues, because the public out there really is questioning a lot of these particular actions. Thank you.
Thank you. And the last two questions. The one to the CFO on page 214, the situation with Prasa. You reported a certain outstanding amount and a certain unpaid amount to the tune of amount of 923 million by the end of March 2011. Has that been paid since March 2011, and has any interest been paid? That's the first question. And the second one is on the materiality limit for reporting. I see in your report you say the shareholder representative determines the materiality limit. My question is also to the CFO. Shouldn't that be the task of an auditor, of the audit function, to determine the materiality limit to be reported in your annual report? I'm not talking about the limit of 25 million. I'm talking who is responsible to put that limit. Over to Johnson.
Yeah, we are training train drivers. We actually have a school of rail, which trains train drivers. And we have the train drivers are included in that figure of 1,125 people that have been trained during this year. I'll try and get you the figure of exactly how many of those were train drivers, but we do train drivers as an ongoing process. Especially now that we've got new locomotives, we need to train them in the new locomotives. So we just got the number 617 train drivers out of the 1,125 were train drivers. The cold storage and dry docks privatization, I'm not aware that we're privatizing anything at the moment, Mr. Moro.
Just put it on the record.
No, we're not privatizing anything.
The vacancy of the CFO. The CFO, when the CFO is appointed, CFO also becomes a board member. And so the process is that the appointment of the CFO must go through the nominations committee of the board as well as the shareholder. We are discussing that at the moment with the board, looking for the appointment of the CFO, and I hope that it is a process that can be completed in the next 2 months. But it is receiving urgent attention at the moment. Yes, I think that the Muha anchor tenant, the operator of the Muha port terminal is Transnet Port Terminals. And so we have invested in the building of the Muha port. So far, I think we've spent about 13 billion. We are continuing to invest in the port of Muha. At the moment, there are people that are laying down the paving and ensuring that there is taking capacity in that port. We will be going out on tender very soon to buy cranes for that port. When the cranes arrive, the capacity of the terminal will be increased to about 2 million containers. We are looking at relocating manganese possibly to Muha. So we will operate the port of Muha unless the port authority.
No, that is so, Chair.
The assets of the National Port Authority are assets in the Transnet balance sheet. We have gone out to international investors and borrowed money on the basis of our balance sheet. We are not about to communicate to the investors that the assets of the National Port Authority will no longer form part of the Transnet balance sheet, because that would be an act of default on the bonds that we have. So, I mean, it is a matter that still needs to be, I don't know if the government department or cabinet thinks differently about it, but from where we sit, we think that we should avoid an act of default on our bonds. And so if you take out the assets of the Port Authority out of the Transnet balance sheet, a problem will be created. You must remember that from a distance and the regulatory side of the port, we have the port regulator. So we do not see any conflict of interest in the port authority and the port terminals being under the Transnet roof and the assets being there. It allows us to go and borrow money that we can use to develop the land that is owned by the Port Authority, which is to develop the port. As we have been doing, we have been borrowing money and using the entire Transnet balance sheet. We bought the dredger, we are dredging the port, we're strengthening the walls, we're buying new equipment for the port and so on with the Port Authority, and so making sure that our ports can actually operate. So I think, I do not think that it will be a wise decision to do so. But I will obviously take direction from the government and the government and cabinet on this matter. But as far as we're concerned, we must try to avoid an act of default on our bonds. The investors can immediately call their debt if we take out any of our current assets of the balance sheet. The net asset value of Transnet. It was 168
the other day. The total asset of France is about 170 billion. The net asset value is in the region of about 120 billion. Yeah.
So it's less debt. Sorry, it's a chatara content. I'm just just in a low level economist. Table set. I was at the port of Rotterdam last week with Mr. Carl Fosigua, and I saw something very interesting there. They have a scanner. I don't know where they got it, but they have a scanner that can scan the contents of a container. Where? It used to be there.
No, we've got one, but it's not operated by Transnet, it's operated by SAS.
CEO, it's over to you. You have the floor. You have the floor.
Yeah. No.
You protect it.
SAS has a scanner. But the point I was going to make is that we actually need that container scanner everywhere, because the copper that is stolen is actually exported out of South Africa in containers. So what we need to do, I think, is to close the borders, to close the points where the copper gets out. So if we scan every single container and check for copper inside the containers, but then it will also have to be cargo that leaves by air and cargo that leaves by road, so that the copper does not leave the country. So I think we need a total strategy. We need to try and understand the market for copper. Where does the copper go? We need to try and stop where it is leaving the country, and we need to understand the syndicate better. To this end, we have just employed, as I reported to the committee last time, a very senior crime intelligence officer, a major general, and former retired major general in crime intelligence, who has just joined Transnet to advise, especially on this issue. It's a matter that we're taking very seriously, and he is setting up systems now to monitor both the market and to advise on decisive interventions to stop the problem in cooperation with the police. As you may have read in the newspapers in the last couple of weeks, we've actually had some successes where people were arrested, I think, in Krugersdorp. I think there were two arrests in the last 3 weeks, in Springs as well, yeah.
Just to assist Mulif, a few years ago, SARS went out on a big tender to procure plus minus 27 border scanners for all borders, inland and also from the oceans. I don't know of the management here if any of them are aware as to what happened to that project. It was worth a couple of billions of rands at the time.
But from what I saw last week in Rotterdam, I think I was actually suitably impressed. Or even if it is not for, we can cooperate with SARS to help them try to determine, because SARS uses the scanner to see what is inside and whether customs are being paid properly and so on and so forth. But it should be used for a number of reasons, to make sure that we don't have dangerous goods, to make sure that there are no obviously stolen goods like copper and minerals that are leaving the country illegally, and also to assist SARS. So at the moment, we have a policy that we don't open containers. But I still think as a country, we have a right to know what is passing through our borders, what is passing through our ports. And it is something that we will be taking up. But last week, I saw a very, very good scanner overseas, and I thought it was a good idea. Well, we'll have to look at Mr. Singman's
department. Mr. Malesi, don't respond to remarks. It's fine. Transit, are you done?
There were a few others. We do have the statistics on the breakdown of employment equity numbers, and that breakdown is on page 93 of the annual report. I don't know if you want to talk about the criteria for buzzery appointments.
Thank you, Brian. The batteries that we award also are aligned to our employment equity plan that we implement, and so 93% of the award of the batteries that we currently have, or the buses that are currently going through the schooling program, are black.
Chair, on the CFO, sorry, on the Plaza outstanding amount, yeah, we are talking with the CEO of Plaza we are having a one day because actually he's disputing this and that. He wants the blue train, and he says, I won't tell you until you do. So we have some dispute. So we set out one day offsite where we're going to go somewhere in the bush and then talk about all the problems. He's going to bring his files and his people. I'm going to bring my people and my files, and then we're going to sort it out. But he's hello? We must come to Parliament. No. It will be a very private engagement with Mr. Nantan. And then the materiality limit is recommended by the audit committee to the shareholder, and he approves it at the AGM. Correct.
Brian, you are correct as it relates to the PFMA reportable irregularities in terms of Section 55. In terms of the audit materiality, that's the limit to which the auditors will perform the audit of the organization. That is set by the auditors and reviewed by the audit committee. And currently that is set at about 400 million rand per annum.
Chair, that is all.
Thank you, Mr. Modese. I think we're doing very well. Can we close the meeting, or the final round of people who just want to ask one small follow-up or one final question?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, the chairman, can I assist on the question on the incentive schemes of Transnet? Maybe I'm talking at policy level. The scheme operates this way. There's a short-term incentive, there's a long-term incentive. The short-term incentive is paid annually. The long-term is paid over a period of 3 years. And there are rules and conditions on how you get awarded, what we call it banked, as to what has been banked. And whatever has been paid to anybody is paid according to those rules. Now, having indicated that, as the new board that came in, we called for a review of that scheme. And I'm hoping at one of the subcommittees of the board, we will finalize the new rules. Because as a new person coming on that board, I was of the view that the rules were not tight enough. That's point number one. Point number two, I was of the view that the KPIs were not tight enough and tough enough. So the KPIs have been changed for this year. They are quite tough. My executives are aware that they won't get the numbers that they were used to in the past because the rules have fundamentally been changed. But also the rules of the KPIs, but also the rules of the system have been tightened. And one of the days, the board and the subcommittee in charge will sign off on those new rules. So going forward, you'll observe then as we finish this financial year, that there's a change that has taken place. But the board and other structures must still approve these things so that as we apply them for this year going forward, you begin to see those changes.
So much. I'm going to ask everybody now just a final closing comment or a question that we're going to adjourn. Honorable September.
Parliament's infrastructure is challenging. Yes, thank you very much. I thank you for this opportunity to I can now ask the following questions. The first one is, we note that you, under governance, we note that you have in the report one non-executive director that has 65 directorships. How is it possible that you know we can have something like this and that value that the organization get from such a dispensation? The second one is, we all know that South Africa is hosting a COP 17, and so my concern is that in the report it appears that you are losing land transport, you know, the market share of land transport. You are losing to road transport. Now, if that is the case, it does have an impact on mitigation, adaptation, and you know, the entire climate change thing. But nevertheless, Chair, having asked the 65 directorship, it forces me to also ask on page 102 that you have cranes that cannot operate in high winds. Why is it so?
Let us note, I think what Honourable September is referring to is your, on page 102, is the Cape Town terminal. We every day, as members of Parliament, pass the Cape Town harbour. And there was a report that your RTG cranes here in Cape Town, container terminal, cannot operate in high winds. And the question you ask is just whether it's true or not. So that was a report in the public domain to say the cranes, the 32 cranes that Transnet has erected here, it cannot operate in high winds. And Cape Town is a windy place. They call it the Cape Doctor. So the question is of Honourable September whether those cranes can operate in high winds situations. Just to make it clear that it's only one question. For a wrap-up. Otherwise, we're going to in a third round. Honourable Foreman.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions have all been attended to, but I think suffice to say that I think we're very excited, especially having come out of the spring school, at the direction that Transnet is going in, and we look forward to working through and making the difference that we would like to see on the ground for the people.
Anybody else? Mr. McQueen?
Yes, Chairperson, a small one. What is the overall strategy of Transnet in disposing of derelict equipment, derelict buildings, warehouses, all that are just lying fallow there? Some of them are being vandalized. Is a rhetorical question. Have you got a plan, perhaps, to... and make them available through some B procurement in order to ensure that there's downstream job creation, etc. I would like to know what the overall strategy is. Linked to that, of course, it has the whole question of disposal of branch lines. The lady mentioned of, because I don't know, but you're going to dispose of branch lines, the 8,000-kilometer branch lines. I just want to hear more about that.
Mr. Khololo, your final question.
Okay, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to rate them, actually, with their performance. I know they've got key performance indicators, but I wanted to, out of 10, actually, I wanted to give them 8.
It's a plus.
We'll explain that later. Mr. Honorable Sontu?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I will agree with my colleague only when I've interacted with whoever is dealing with social investment. Thank you very much.
Honourable Fandana.
Yes, I just wanted to suggest something. And, in Cape Town, the specialized units work well with the copper theft. It's people that have a specialized knowledge of knowing what cable theft is. They go there. You don't have to have a lot of people. You have an overall country. You might have 10 or 20 people that just coordinate, go to the scene, make sure that, you can't leave your keys in your car outside and expect it's not going to be stolen. You are also responsible for your own assets. And if you just say, well, we have appointed one person and he will be looking at these things, it doesn't seem like you are very serious about looking after your own assets. And this is the point I want to make. I tell my children, don't leave your bicycle outside. It will get stolen. So they put it inside. They look after it. Even my children know they can't leave it outside. So you must make special effort to look after your assets.
I think Honorable Van Dalen speaks from experience. So, Honorable Trailer.
Strike that from the record. Just on the last point, on the issue that you are saying that you're tightening up your policy on remuneration and incentive bonuses, I mean, can I request that you then supply this committee with that policy, because I think it is vital for us to be informed, particularly when we get asked questions about what we are doing on this particular issue. We need to know what has happened there and what the policy will be going forward so that we can really look at that. Thank you.
And just from my side, I was really surprised to find in your report of directors on page 219, the National Environmental Management Integrated Coastal Management Act of 2008. I can't understand where that mistake came in, where all Transnet-owned port properties such as the boat below the high water mark was transferred. 31 billion rand of assets. And here you say you're in the process to formulate amendments. Now, we're the legislature. So my question is just to find out where is this process and how can we assist you to correct this historical mistake. I don't know how it happened that such a somebody was fast asleep.
Tell you how it happened.
No, you don't have to answer that. And then I'll close. Over to you, Mr. Malusha.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm going to deal with the board membership.
Honorable Chairperson, based on what feedback I'm being given, yes, there is such a director, Peter Malungan. He is in the property business. And because he is in the property business, at times when you buy properties, you create many new companies under that, so that those companies are legal separate entities. So that is why then he ends up with so many directorships. And Mulefe, let me give you the COP17 situation and the cranes question.
Sorry, Chair, point of order. Now, I didn't ask why. My question was really, do you really think it's right that you can have that situation?
Honorable Chairperson, the board member in question attends to all Transnet issues on time and is dedicated to that. But having said that, there is a new ruling coming in from the shareholder which begins to question the amount of boards that the non-executive sits in. So it's a question of when is that new ruling being implemented into various SOEs. But I've seen a guideline on the appointment of non-executive directors, and this question of too many directorships is being addressed, that it's not to be encouraged to a point where to pick up directorships above a certain number, you actually need shareholder approval. So the shareholder is conscious of that, and if at any point, then it needs to be dealt with in that particular manner, it will be dealt with. But the board member in question is very diligent, and he contributes to that board.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Mr. Sotuka to talk about the cranes in Cape Town and the fact that they are built on the wind panel. I don't know what the wind panel is.
Thank you, Brian. Chair, in Cape Town at the container terminal, we are at the last leg of a major refurbishment program and replacement program, rather, of the cranes, both the ship-to-shore cranes that do the loading and the offloading of vessels, and also the yard cranes. And the option that we went with inside the yard was to convert from a straddle carrier operation to an RTG or rubber-tied gantry type of operation, which is much more efficient. In fact, we're seeing that in the numbers now in terms of the productivity level at the Cape Town Container Terminal. The issue with those yard cranes is that they calibrated to cut off at wind speeds of 72 kilometers an hour as a safety measure. In fact, they start going into creep mode, and then once it hits 72 kilometers an hour, they then stop. And this is an important safety measure because they're very high, those cranes, and could put employees at risk if anything happened with that crane. Cape Town, yes, unfortunately, is a city which has a lot of wind, particularly in the latter part of the year. We are working at the moment very closely with the shipping lines to look at alternative options inside the terminal during the windy season, where we use equipment such as reach stackers and the like, so that when the cranes do cut off, we're still able to continue with operations, but using other type of equipment, which will still not be putting our employees at risk. But yes, wind is a major issue at the Cape Town terminal.
If I understand correctly, you acknowledge there is a problem. Okay.
Chair, we have a properties division at Transnet, in fact, we've just changed the organogram to make the properties division part of the executive committee, which it was not. And in the meantime, we're looking for a group executive properties. There is, in the meantime, a moratorium on the disposal of buildings and so on. And we will develop a strategy as soon as we have employed an executive division properties. Branch lines, we have a program to concession of unused branch lines that other people think they can use. So it's not really selling them off, but concessioning them off, allowing people to operate on the branch lines. And so we'll be inviting people to come and operate on some of the branch lines. And that is part of our commitment to public sector, private sector participation in our infrastructure. Yeah, Mr. Van Zanden, I think we must take our copper home when you go home. No one. And put it in the garage and lock it up and take it to work tomorrow morning. And policy on... 10 minutes. The issue that you raised, Mr. Chair, a couple of years ago when the waterfront deal was done, there was a very incorrect newspaper report that said Transnet has sold all assets under the sea, including the water and everything. That alarmed everybody, and then the law was passed, and then it was discovered that no, but this law is now creating other problems. That is how it arose. It was out of a very big Sunday Times article at the time that said that the waterfront has been sold with all the water under the sea, which was not correct.
If I can come back to the question of COP 17 and the market share from road to rail, because that is when you begin to reduce some CO2 emissions if that market share grows. I think when we announced the 6 months results or even the year's results of this financial year, we will be announcing that we are picking up more market share from the roads and therefore contributing towards reduction of CO2 and other emissions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, it is now my duty to end the session. Can I thank all the members for the really penetrating and thoughtful questions that you put? I really appreciate it. It shows that you studied the integrated report and you updated on yourself on this. Secondly, can I congratulate Transnet, firstly, for your initiative when you're going this afternoon to Mbekweni. I travelled that road by that rail on the train, and that is a very scary situation. What you're going to address this afternoon in Paul in that area? It is scary to travel by train and to see the community literally next to the road. So thank you for your initiative to address that issue. Thank you for the session, for your responses to the session. I think the committee is putting two issues to you. We have trust in your leadership as a Transnet, as a board, as the executive committee. And secondly, we appreciate your strong balance sheet that you present to the committee and your commitment to roll out infrastructure development investment in the next 5 to 10 years. We really have a great trust in you. Many members have spoken about, I just want to confirm, our trust is in you, not to disappoint. Then it will not end here. What we're going to do after this meeting in the next week or two, we will put the report to Parliament on this session, on your annual report. That report will go to Parliament with recommendations enter solutions, and the House will probably debate it and accept the report or reject the report. And the actions in the recommendations will be followed up. So this is only the start of a process to be rolled out from our side in Parliament. And for that, your contribution here, we really thank you. Thank you for the media. Thank you for everybody else who attended. Thank you for your time. And we wish you a safe journey back. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. I don't know.